Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mental health, but it's not just mental health. It's kind of about people's lives and about how they cope and how they manage in the world.
Yeah, and digging into the stories that make them who they are.
Yeah, so it's real life stories where we talk about things that people have been through and how they've managed and how they've coped and how they've come out the other side. So sometimes it's just me and Borgie here, but more often than not, we're talking to guests, sometimes more well-known guests, but more often than anything, it's just normal people who have been through interesting situations.
Yeah, and they've all got a lovely story to tell.
Yeah, so Mouth and Manliness, we are about mental health, but we're more about people and stories.
So, welcome to the Mouth.
The Mouth of Manliness. Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness, Season 3, coming at ya. So we are still going. It's me and Wargie right here with ya. And we've got Broken Bricks with us today, which is Wargie's band.
Yeah, and also the we're all hosting our own podcast through the door. So this is... Yeah. Our crossover. Here's a screenshot for the Insta right there. Yeah.
Wow! Wow!
But we want to explore how we were exploring in Through the Door about how people make music and how they do it and making sure there's like no rules and it just is. Do you know what I mean? And how best people work, and it's just been mad interesting. Some of the people we've had, hasn't it? It's been great.
Yeah. I was just saying the last guy who had the Spice Girls. I don't know if you chimed in yet, Chrissy, but the last guy we had on, Elliot, lived with the Spice Girls. He had the Spice Girls living in his house before they got famous, because he's like a artist development guy. So he wrote the music and then did all that. And now, yeah, so that was an interesting
chat.
Fame.
Just so everyone knows, the other voice, the man voice, is Lee.
That's me.
And Lee is on the island of Jersey.
I am.
Quite interesting. And
stuck on the rock.
The lady voice was Chrissy. Chrissy, where are you?
Hiya, I'm in East London, Walthamstow.
Walthamstow.
I've got to say, I'm happy you didn't say the other guy voice, because I got a deep voice, so... But you can't really chat.
Got them sexy dulcet tones, girl.
Yeah.
So
there
we
go.
I haven't got a manly voice, though.
Oh, wow. You're one of the first people to say that, but, you know.
A very, very good singing voice.
She's one of the best, is Chris.
No, that's me on vocals. Did you not? Is it? Oh, no. She's on drums, man. You know
what?
I did hear your singing. Warren's playing me your remixes, and I did get to hear your singing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know the one you mean.
It was
all right.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. It really was.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
It worked.
So on my remix of Slow Down, Lee features on the very end, versey chorus weird drop that I did. And it's lovely. It's a nice interpretation of what we did already. It's dope. So we did all three of our remixes for this first single. That Lee's been smashing through for the next two singles. NASA's currently out, obviously. So for the listeners who don't know who we are as a band, Broken Bricks is a... What are we, Lee? Chrissy, what are we?
All right, so I think we've tried to narrow it down. So we're an indie-tronic, electronic indie band, I think. I think that's what it is.
Well, basically, that's probably interesting female vocal and bass, right?
We're splurging a nice little.
Yeah, so we're basically, we started as two producers who was joined by a singer who now produces, and we all play live instruments and we all swap around on instruments. Basically, I think, and it's and it's like a crossover between indie and electronica. So I could think like Yeahs with the XX and I don't know, that kind of vibe.
Bonobo
type,
disco, bit jungle stuff. Like
that. I would say I don't see the Yeahs reference, but. What I do see is like hooky, poppy tunes with a really good soulful voice, and Warren's great voice as well. But yeah, no, there's soul in there.
Oh yeah, there's definitely that in there. I think that came with Chrissy though, mainly.
100%, man.
Yeah.
Like we were just devoid of all soul before I came.
No, we had our soul.
Oh, God.
The thing is, like, Broken Bricks came about from Lee and I were in Bricks, and Nick has played bass for Bricks recently. Haven't you, Nick? So we had lots of like one-on-one sessions about learning the songs. And then we started just making really nice electronic music. And, well, we thought it was nice anyway.
I don't know, it started out a bit.
A bit bass heavy and horrible. Yeah,
we just come off the back of Bricks, so it was all a bit.
Yeah, lyrically and stuff.
Yeah,
and then I saw the wonderful Chrissy singing in Leytonstone with your pal, and I was like, I phoned up Liam. Was like, I need to get this girl in this band. Trust me on this. This is going to happen.
Yeah,
exactly what I said to you, right?
That's to come in and impress Lee because he was a hard one to please. But I mean, you know, it went perfect.
We both our hairs were standing on end when we first ever recorded your voice.
You haven't got any hair.
It's awesome. I mean, so he literally, I remember him nudging me and turning around and going, "Yes, mate." And I was like, "Exactly."
Yeah.
And here we are, aren't we?
And it's been. It's been a couple of years now. It's funny how quickly it goes when you make an album.
It's been about 3 months, 4 months, and I'm like, oh my
gosh. Yeah. But saying that though, I mean, we were originally talking about doing an album launch in last summer, and we were talking about doing we are still talking about doing a full album launch, like live thing, like basically play the whole album, invite some people, and play the whole album front to back. As a showcase, but then put it out on the same night. And we were going to do that in summertime. So by now we would have been touring, but then that pandemic thing got in the way, didn't it?
that pandemic thing.
Yeah, but it's all good. We managed to crack on anyway. And when Slow Down went out, it rocketed for me. Like, you know, it's had about 100,000 streams and all that kind of stuff. So to come from nothing to that was, in that kind of a situation, was amazing.
Yeah. And now we're mid-campaign with a new single, NASA.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a similar sort of tune in terms of like content, I guess. It's around relationship and breakup, but it's a bit more fuck you. Whereas Slow Down was a bit more like, we need to sort of assess what's going on here.
Yeah.
Exactly that. And it's picking up lovely momentum, isn't it? We're doing well.
Yeah, it's getting. I mean, it's interesting because everything is. It seems nowadays everything is based around kind of like playlisting. A lot of it's based on playlisting, streaming, and so you're targeting a very like sort of niche area. So if you've got one album that's got several different, it spans a few different genres. You're going to be playlisted on very different kinds of playlists, and it, I suppose those different kinds of playlists have different uses. Like if it's just a general pop one, you may get more streams off it, but I don't know. It's been an interesting learning curve just seeing how you release music nowadays. It's so different. It's cool.
It's going to be interesting because we've got quite a breadth of styles on that through the whole album. So it's like, you know, someone could love that one song and the other song that might not be the typical thing they listen to. So, you know, like you said, one time you're targeting more pop and then you've got kind of more indie. So it's just been interesting.
Yeah.
The contrast.
It is funny, isn't it? Like the whole, it's all changed from when we were younger. You know, it really is. Like the fact, like when Warren was telling me about playlists, and I think, yeah, my daughter like consumes music through playlists.
Mm.
It's like she don't have an, she won't listen to an album, which I find quite like shit.
It is. It is. You know what though? But I, so like if I'm doing something and I put an album on, my head goes to the album and I have to listen to it. And I can't concentrate on what I'm doing because I'm thinking about the music in the album, especially if it's something that I like. Yeah. Like, I can't listen to Radiohead and do something else. I just end up sitting and listening to the album. Whereas if I whack on, like, an Afrobeats, like, funk jazz playlist and it's just, like, off it going in the background, I'm good. So for me, I don't know, like, it's it has its uses as well as being... I hear what you're saying, though, people kind of lean on that a little bit too much and they don't sit down and appreciate the work, the body of work that an album is. Well, I hope they do because I'm just about to release one. But
yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, as I'm saying it, I'm thinking, did we do the right thing?
Too late now.
Yeah, I still listen to CDs. I wrote my car off yesterday, like just through not looking after it. And I've got to take all the CDs out of my car. And I'm like, oh, I hope I get my next car as a CD player. They just don't even have them anymore.
No.
Because like, I listen to an album and I can't bear a mix. But you guys are much more modern than me. I think like remixes and things like that, I don't go into remixes, man. I'm like, why would you? When the album's
done. Mate, I was with you on that one. But then saying that, you wouldn't get me making electronic music until I met Warren. I just got into it. You just sort of get into it. And then when you get into electronic music and making electronic music, you start hearing how you would make a remix of something. And then when you start making remixes, you sort of get hooked on it because it's like your interpretation of a song. I don't know. It's a hard thing to kind of describe, really. But yeah, it's like almost like paying tribute to the song but giving it your own flavor, and it's exciting to do. I love doing it. Yeah
Do you know what, I love a good remix. I like, obviously it depends if you have a song you love and then you hear what you think of someone butchering it, you're thinking, what have you done? Yeah. But then you get those rare gems as well where it's like a song you didn't even know and they just completely switch the drum roll. It shows you other new artists in that stage, and when it's done well, I love a good remix. But
your one in particular was really interesting. I loved it. It was like two songs.
Yeah. When it just goes meh and then it goes into the air, like.
Well, that's the first time I've remixed anything in my life. So I can hear all my learning curve moments. I'm like, now I need to do that different. That's how it always goes when you make something though, right?
Yeah. Every time.
Yeah. The general element of having the two contrasts and things. Yeah. So it's quite whacked up, you might say.
One of the best remixes I ever heard was a Rolling in the Deep Adele Jamie XX remix. It's such a good remix. Like, it's amazing.
Like
half step sort of, again, like Afrobeat rhythm to it. And then he sort of pitches up the vocal and fucks with it and just loads of bass.
Oh, yeah.
That remix is unreal. And there's a Caribou remix of a Fortet tune. I can't remember the name of it, so it's pretty pointless.
Even that Pretty Lights remix of... Etta James, and it's just like finally moving. It's like, sometimes I got a feeling. That's
hold on, I got the guitar.
But that is just totally switching its head. It's stunning. Oh, there we go. Got a guitar ready.
Oh, yeah. Always.
When do you not?
See, like, I'm like, what, 10? How old are you, Lee?
Oh, fucking hell. It's old. 30.
We're putting out an album, Lie, 5 years.
I'm 38, I think.
So yeah, I'm a bit older than it. I'm like 10 years older than Warren. And I was watching YouTube today, and everything that comes up for me is like the last time that I really liked any new music was like the time of like the Strokes or Interpol. I kind of got, that was it then. Now, but in fairness, Warren has opened my eyes to a few other things, because like the music me and Warren do is like, he'll put
you know, like modern drums and that on it.
What Nick has got is like this bank of like loads and loads and loads of sound that he makes, right? So it's just like, it's like colours. Like the instruments that he makes himself and puts them through like these, like a helix and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I've just been arranging it, really, and putting it together. And it's just, it's a very interesting way of working. Because like the way Lee and I write, we write very structured songs. And then Chrissy comes in and then we change, Chrissy and I, then we'll change something. And then like we start to mess about. Yeah, that's teenage engineering thing.
Get one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can run your... When you're making sound, you just sample it straight in and then you can just trigger it to beats and stuff and chop it up.
What is that?
I've looked at them.
Yeah, they're amazing. Amazing, honestly.
For our listeners,
I did the whole... I don't know. Did we put this video out?
There'll be bits of it, yeah. We're going.
We'll just put this bit out. So, yeah, now this is a Teenage Engineering Pocket Operator, KO.
As well.
And I did the slow down remix using that.
They're not expensive, are they?
Oh, it wasn't. Yeah, it depends on which one you get. So this one's the more expensive one, I think. There's other ones that are like lighter versions and stuff you can get, but this is the fucking bollocks. It's really good.
Oh, is it kind of like a Liberator, but like in real life?
Yeah, you sample in whatever you want, and then you just fuck with it, and it's got pre-programmed like beats and stuff on it, or you can just take beats, or you can like play a whole song in. And then chop it all up on the keypads, and then you can just play it. It's cool. It's really good.
Teenage Engineering.
Sorry, I just got distracted by the way, Warren, that you're wearing your headphones.
I know. Yeah, he's got a mutant ear sticking out the top of his head. The Hills of Eyes.
Audio routing from two computers. You see at the minute. So it's...
The Hills of Eyes.
Teenage Engineering. Just like I think it's called an OP1, which is like I think it's about £700. But it's this tiny little synth. But it's,
no, it'd be PO1. It'd be pocket operator. PO.
It's not. It's a TC1 or something. But basically, it's white. It's got a built-in multi-tracker. It's got a tape, like the tape emulator on it is amazing. You can do like loads of really cool shit, like all the sort of stuff where you like you can play something over and then warp it and play something over, and it's just this little unit like this.
Yeah,
unreal, man. Now you can use it as in interface, a synth in. It's mental, man. It's like really, really good bits of kit for just making like random sounds and stuff. It's fucking
amazing. Yeah. I'm going to dig into that on the next Broken Bricks album, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to make a few posts.
The next album is just going to be like all of us coming with 1,000 ideas.
We're going to get a barn. Yeah, it is. Right? We're going to get a barn somewhere.
We're going to get a barn.
Nick's going to come down and keep our mental health.
First thing we need is a bloody barn.
This is it.
And once we got bar,
talking about,
I'm gonna put that away before it all gets.
So how are you dealing with lockdown, Chrissy? You said you've been working. Do you work from home?
Yeah, I've been working from home. I'm free. I worked freelance, so for a few months I wasn't working, and then I was.
What did you do?
Finance. So when it comes to sort of my voices, I'm going to be the one looking at those. But when we start making the money, I've not found. Yeah, I probably shouldn't say this, but I've not found lockdown like hard. Like I'm quite a reclusive character, and honestly, that I did like the fact that you didn't have that social pressure to be going out and all that sort of stuff. It was a weird sort of relief. Which I know sounds crazy.
No, I felt that.
Experienced that at all? Did you? Yeah. And even thinking about going back out now and like meeting people, it does give me a bit of anxiety. I'm sure, you know, after a beer or so, it's fun, but
of course,
yeah. I haven't found lockdown hard. Obviously, everything going on has been horrible. But on a personal level, I've really enjoyed like the downtime to myself where you just don't normally have it.
Do you live on your own?
No, I live with my sister. So,
what's your address? What's the postcode?
That wasn't creepy at all. But no, I mean, I don't know how you guys have done it, but apart from everything happening in the world, I've kind of enjoyed the time to myself, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Productive, I can say that.
Well, yeah.
In terms of like making.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You know.
I think we've been so preoccupied with trying to keep this release on track. And all the other shit that's going on that like, I don't know. I haven't really noticed it anymore. I've just gotten used to it, I think.
And you think it's lucky, because like, I've been more productive than I've ever been, I think, through lockdown.
Yeah.
And I've been able to dig into things that I've never done before.
Mm.
And it's, I just feel lucky that I've got that creative bit in me. If I didn't, I think I'd really struggle.
Yeah.
It's given me time and space to like paint and do all kinds of things. And yeah, if he didn't have that creative element, it'd be fucked, man. My brain would be going haywire.
Yeah, which like, a lot of people, a lot of my mates are like that, kind of up north in the UK. They're just, you know, like climbing the walls. Or they were, not anymore, but like... Yeah, I'm with you on that one though, because I can sit in a tiny room. It doesn't even need to be a big room. Just give me a little room and a piano in it, or like leaving on just a laptop and set of headphones, and I could be there for hours. And I'm like, shit, fucking hell, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Better go to bed. You know, I'm like,
so, wait just 1 minute, and it's 6 o'clock in the morning. Like,
yeah. So I'm with you on that one. I think it's it's been good in a way. It's been the only. What I'm missing is I'm missing playing music with you guys.
Yeah, massively.
I was really looking forward to taking it live. Like,
yeah,
really looking forward to it because I know it's going to bang. You know, I know it is.
Well,
and that's a shame.
It, you know, it's something Lee and I have always sort of had in previous bands as well. And because it's been a learning curve getting to Broken Bricks and seeing how we can do that now.
Yeah.
Like it's so intrinsic to sort of how
we've taken Bricks Live, which
Lee was like, when we approached that as a drummer, it was like it was a very intense time. I was sort of living with him a bit. I'd split out with Amy, like we had a lot. So I'd split out with my ex. And like, and
that's what editing's for, mate.
Oh, fucking hell. Anyway, start again.
You threw yourself off there, didn't you?
So I was living with Lee, and I was sort of, you know, away from my family, and for the first time in ages, and it was a very natural thing to just like knock out all these tunes. But Lee was like, so we were playing like hardcore, and he's like, well, yeah, I can drum, but like, I've never played fucking hardcore. I ain't got a clue. Turns out he's the best hardcore drummer I know. So,
yeah, but how many hardcore drummers you know?
And go, well, I know a few, but it's that mentality. When we got live, it was all very good. Like Tio was amazing, our bass player. And it's something I miss so much, man. Like,
there's
something
like,
about
just playing live, like with us. The element of I'm just really looking forward to people sort of seeing Chrissy live singing our songs that we all made together.
I'm so excited. I can't wait. I'm not really thinking about it though, because I know it can't happen yet. So I feel like that's all good stuff to come. So
yeah.
So I'm just kind of biding my time, not overthinking it. I'm just looking forward to it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
I think it'd be nice if you could get out at least to the tail end of the summer, because like the songs you've released so far have got a real summer feel to them. It would just work. It would work really well.
That was the idea. That was why we wanted to do it last year. Then we ended up releasing the first one in October.
Yeah, it wasn't really summer weather. It wasn't really summer weather.
Yeah. And then, because we just wanted to sort of start getting the wheels in motion.
And I think the mentality of just get it out and get it done and get people hearing us. And we've been really fortunate that we've had a lot of listens, we've had a lot of views.
Yeah, and loads of views.
We're getting some fans, you know, and that's what we want, so that when we do drop this, the shows can be like, the album A Perfect View to Run, when it comes out after our next single, which will be Tapestry.
Mm.
The plan being that we're going to be so focused on just playing live and drilling it as much as we can everywhere. Mm. And that's what our next year is going to be, I think, as a band. And like I think it's something I miss so much, of just being in a room with these guys. I've had the privilege of you know, making music with Nick and stuff, and making Mouth of Madness as well, you know, and that's been great. But to actually have that sort of daily thing of like getting to rehearsal and having that back in my life is like, honestly, I'm craving that shit.
It's really hard to explain to someone who doesn't like make music with other people, what it's like being in a room, you know, like with a proper drum kit and that. And
yeah,
it's really hard to explain what that's like, because it is pretty special when you all kind of click in the same thing and you're all playing at your best and it all sounds good and it works. There's nothing like it, man. There's really not. And then if you take that in front of other people and they like it, you know, it's like one of the best feelings in the world. Like my best days are gigging days, you know. Best, like my, you know, a lot of my best memories are like playing to lots of people. It's fucking amazing.
I really heard the stuff you guys made together. I've heard some of the stuff you guys make together. It's so jammy. It's lovely.
What, the stuff me and Warren do?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
I was like, show me, I'm nosy.
I haven't heard this. What's this? But nothing.
Oh,
I don't get away with nothing.
We're only starting to make proper bits of it all, and it's good.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah, well, I did
get a call of sound
a few months ago, so, you know.
Oh, thank you. No one's heard it. You're like the only one. I played it to my wife. My wife's kind of apathy is always impressed.
You know what? It's always, I always think it's so funny playing, because my sister, for example, doesn't ever make music, but it's, I always find it funny playing music to somebody who makes music versus somebody who just listens to music.
Yeah.
Like,
it's totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different. Like, you know, I remember I've shown my sister something in the past and she's been like, it's good, but I'm bored. Whereas someone else who will make something will be like, I love the subtle thing you've done there. Or, you know what I mean?
Mm. So,
yeah, it's always different depending who you show it to. But I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So how you been coping then, Lee? You're out. Last time I spoke to you...
I was in pieces, wasn't I? I got carried into a cab and sent home.
What was this?
Cab home.
Yeah.
I
was fucking wasted.
Did I miss the story?
I was just hammered. I think we
were rehearsing Bricks.
Yeah, we did. And
we
then,
were rocking out.
I think I drank about eight cans while we were rehearsing.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
Well, no, not really. It was just hot. And I was just like, well, I have a beer. And then we went to the pub. And then them two were just like, what are you talking about? And I was like, oh, I'm trying to join in the conversation. I'm like, I know. Like, yeah, I think you need a cab.
Sounded like Wurzel Gummidge on acid.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Looked like him as well.
Hey, it was quite, it was actually dribbling.
Yeah, it was.
I got this thing where I think, you know, like normally when people get drunk and blokes are like, wow, you drink more, make him a proper mess. And I'm like, no, I don't play like
it
that.
It really happens to me to that degree.
It was a funny one, wasn't it? Cause
yeah, I don't know.
I know what it was.
We went. I got a weird noise in. We went to the pub and you started buying whiskies and beers and I'd already had eight beers. And you were then drinking beers with a whiskey shot and it was fucking night.
Yeah. You've just gained over, yeah.
Yeah. That was what it was. Yeah. So anyway, but a lot's happened since then, hasn't it? When was that? It was fucking...
That was like tail end of last summer.
Yeah, was it? Lockdown had eased, right?
Yeah, it was still. You were able to travel.
Was it? I can't even remember when that was, but yeah. Yeah, because it was nice weather. Wasn't it? But
being in a room screaming my lungs out, I've got to say. That was needed. Yeah.
But yeah, it's been all right over here. It's just, it's been a weird one because there's only 100,000 people on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And the island's only like 7 miles wide by 5 miles or something like that. So there's, right now at the moment, there's like 3 people who have COVID that are in hospital. Do you know what I mean? There's like no one. Not, it's very easy to sort of contain it when there's a little breakout. So they didn't really like do the full lockdown, thankfully. Well, they did for a little bit. So they shut the schools. My kids were at home, and that was the toughest bit because my wife was working and I was just like looking after the kids because just in the house and you couldn't leave the house. But that didn't last for too long. And then after that, they sort of just went, yeah, actually, that we overreacted, just like eased back a little bit. And ever since then, it's been all right. You know, you've got to wear a mask, but restaurants are open, pubs are open, all that kind of stuff. We went to the like a holiday resort with the kids this last Easter weekend and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, like on the one hand, it's been amazing for that, and on the other, I feel about a million miles away from my family and friends. Yeah, I feel like I just haven't seen anyone. So, But it's like, yeah, so every cloud has a silver lining type thing.
Because that was the impression I got, like when we did meet and you were talking about Jersey, and I got the impression that you were a little bit isolated then.
Well, I think everyone was in isolation, weren't they?
No.
That's what they called it. no, but yeah, no. I think at that time I was kind of going through an adjustment period as well.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know that this whole COVID shit was going to happen. I just agreed to move to Jersey and happened to move 2 weeks before COVID kicked in.
Oh, really? Timing. Was that close?
Yeah, literally 2 weeks. Yeah. I got here. And then I remember having a job interview and then COVID happened and it was like, what the fuck is this shit? So I'd moved country, moved my kids to a different school, moved house, moved jobs, done all that, and then went into a pandemic. It was just like a bit much. Yeah. You know what I mean? What the fuck is going on? And so, and then we had to rent our house out in England and all that kind of stuff. And it was just like, oh, I was a bit fucking vexed with it all. But over time I've realized actually it was a blessing in disguise, really, because it's been compared to how everybody else has had it, or a lot of other people have had it, I've had it sweet, so thank you very much. Can't complain.
So you didn't move for a job? I thought you'd moved for a job.
No, I just went for a fucking laugh, really. I just sort of I'm one of these kind of people where if an opportunity presents itself and it feels like something that might be exciting, I just do it. And it just, that's exactly what happened. It was just kind of like, it was a period of time where I was thinking about what my next move was going to be. And then this thing came up and my missus just said, it was her, she got the job. She got a job transfer, the same company. Oh, okay. And then she just said, how do you fancy Jersey? And I was like, Googled it. Let's go.
I googled it.
Which was annoying because I just spent 10 grand building a fucking recording studio at my other house.
Yeah, it was stunning. It was absolutely
this is what I mean. Like, I'm a bit impulsive in that way. Like, I'll spend 10 grand building a studio and then fuck off to another country. Stupid, man, but it's just the way I am.
It became our spiritual home, didn't it, for a long time, making a broken British record.
Yeah, it's still there, man. It's still there. It's all still there. It's just sat there waiting, all boxed up. I think
that has been the sad part, though, like not being able to see you at all, Lee. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't realize how serious or intense it was until, like, you were just off. You just, it's never going to happen. I'm never seeing you ever again is how it feels. Do you know what I mean?
It's weird, yeah. And especially with things like music videos. I mean, we fucking scraped through with trying to do music videos, photo shoots.
It's a fucking nightmare.
Mm. You know, like, trying to get a photo shoot and have it look decent.
Photoshopped in.
Yeah,
like, hello. It's
just fucking, yeah, but we've made it work so far. I'm pretty proud of that, to be fair. I think
you know, you could probably come back before, hopefully come back, obviously.
Yeah, I think I'm planning like a UK road trip.
UK massive
one man road trip. Yeah, I'm just going to play EDM out the boot of my car in car parks and invite people up and down the country.
Come and see my car.
I'm going to go see me
now. Hotspots of the UK, Lee,
That's it, yeah. I'm going to see me now. But then what I was going to do is get the ferry over and then come and see you guys, do some broken bricks work, stroke, drinking, etc.
Yeah, we need to for the best part of a month somehow.
You're allowed to get the ferry over, go see family, but then you have to be the next stop or else you're out of the band, to be honest.
It's hard to be like a kind of cohesive band if one person lives. Like, how many hours? How long does it take you to get to London? A long time.
Well, he was in Blackpool before, so it was better, but it was still
that
like
was Chrissy and I road tripping, basically.
Yeah.
Boat tripping.
It was always good on the way there, but on the hangover on the way back.
When we finished Slow Down, this is one of my favourite memories of, like, I was feeling a bit shitty and weird, and there was a lot of shit going on personally, as there always is with me. That's his common response. Thanks for your support.
I'm joking. I always give you support, you know.
He's always been there, always. But we finished Slow Down, and in its first sort of incarnation. Like after, like, Chrissy and I worked on it in London and it was just an electronic bit and we took it to the studio and it became this big live monster of a track and it was lovely. and we just played it in the kitchen, and Kat's wife Lee was jumping up and Lee's wife Kat was jumping up and down going absolute batshit crazy to this tune we just made. And it was like the most reassuring thing you could ever have done as a band. And we had like proper gang mentality. Like there was this bar in Poulton called the Cube we went to?
Yeah.
In the garden, it was sunny and just got absolutely arsehold for too long and then came back that afternoon. And we actually got the work done though, which was admirable considering our track record of just not. It was just a really lovely thing to do. And it was always that we always, even though we got mashed up and we like drive up and that, but it did a lot for us for our gang mentality, I think. Do you know what I mean?
I used to like, because the whole album, pretty much, the whole album would be, we'd start something sober, like a very, very basic idea.
Yeah.
And then we'd have shitloads of wine and stuff, go out,
cheese get hammered.
I know, mate. Honestly, cheese and wine. And then we'd wake up in different places in the house in the morning, like, oh, fucking hell, what happened last night? And then we're like, should we check what we did? And then we'd go on and check and be like, hit play. Yeah. And we're like, actually, it's all right.
Yeah.
Like, that's how the whole album came together.
Basically, doing that.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Man.
I miss most of that mental part, but we sold a bit of that after.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Maybe more constructed.
We'll get there.
But
I don't know. It's been good. It's been all right over here.
But yeah, I do feel for like one who's been obviously living on their own in lockdown. That must be a whole different situation.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's why I asked you, like, if you lived with anyone, because if you're on your own, that's totally different.
Well, the truth is, like, well, I used to work part-time, and so my sister was always out, obviously, the house working, so I loved it, because every, like, two, three days a week, I'd have the house to myself, I was, like, queen of the jungle, and then ever since that happened, she was here all the time, I was thinking,
get out of my house.
Have you clashed a bit? Over it?
No, honestly, I think the first couple of months.
Your sister's lovely. I've met her like countless times.
The first couple of months clashed a bit, but you know, with brothers and sisters, you have a little argument and it's gone in about a day. Six, does it? So no, it's actually been nice. We're like closer than ever. So yeah. Sorry, I said that. Oh no, I said it on here. Damn it. But yeah.
Good Lord in.
Like the only people that have been in my bubble, like their sort of bubble, I guess, for like the lockdown stuff was like my sister and her husband, and then my mum, who I was living with, right? So I've moved like twice during lockdown, which has been ace, obviously. But my relationship with my sister has improved so much because like, I've seen her a lot, and she, her husband opened like a butcher shop like in the middle of all this, and they're doing extremely well.
That's
amazing.
Good.
And like, my relationship with her is best it's ever been, weirdly.
Yeah, you were meant to get me some of that, some nice meat.
Some good meat.
All day long, mate. I've got meat for you for days, sunshine.
Hold on, I'm supposed to win this meat list as well.
Believe that there.
Oh, my God.
Let that hang in the ether, shall we?
Meat to please, yeah.
Nick, how have you found the whole thing?
Yeah, I've been all right, really. I have had a meltdown during it. I had a meltdown, I don't know, like September, like my nan died, and that kind of triggered a bit of a meltdown in me. And then I realised that my job was making me ill, or it had been making me ill for years. And then
is it like the stress of the job?
No, not so much that. It dented my sense of worth. So then what happened? You go into a job every day that's dented your sense of worth and makes you feel like you're shit. You go in every day, it cracks away, you're pretty bad. So, so I did have a meltdown, and the meltdown was pretty bad. And then my wife was like, get another job. I don't care if we're poor, just get another job. And then luckily enough, I was able to get a job working in mental health that I really, really like. And through lockdown, to be able to kind of go from the fear of not having a job to getting a job that I really like is So yeah, I can't complain, man. That's amazing.
It's an achievement, yeah. Man. It's good.
Mm. Yes, yeah, I've kind of landed on my feet. I really have. Have you guys, how about, Chrissy, have you ever had any struggles? Do you ever struggle with your brain?
With my brain, did you say?
Yeah. with your mental health.
I used to when I was a lot younger, to be fair. When I was sort of like teenage years, going to maybe 23, I had massive, it's sort of being a young girl and how you look and eating problems and all that sort of stuff. But I've been lucky enough that kind of as I've grown up, that's kind of left me. But also my sister's a psychotherapist, right? So when she started, when she started training to do that, she was often like, oh, you know, how are you really feeling? And talk to me. And I'd always think, go away, leave me alone. I'm fine. But I think having somebody there who forced me to open up as I grew up, maybe from the age of like 24, 25, it's meant that now nothing really ever feels too much for me to handle, because I've learned that you can kind of, as long as you talk about it and you stay open with it, often there's nothing you can't really push past. Yeah. But I think when you don't say anything and it builds up and you've got no one to talk to, that's when it really, really, really gets you.
I think you raised, which I tend to kind of get down to, I think most mental health problems come down to our sense of self and our sense of worth. So like if you don't feel very comfortable in your own skin or of how you look and all of that, like most mental health issues tend to come from that. Even if you've been subject to abuse or something, that makes you feel like you're not good, kind of thing. And I think it all comes from there. And like when you're going through your teenage years, like we all have that. I think there's very few of us don't have those kind of insecurities and self-doubt. I just finished 3 years of psychotherapy. I finished it in February. Yeah, 3 years, which isn't actually that long for psychotherapy, because that can go a very long time.
How did it feel? I mean, how do you feel having finished it? As far as has it helped?
Yeah, it helped a lot. It helped massively. And finishing it, when I got this job, it made lots of conflicts because of the area I work in and everything. But then I kind of spoke to the therapist and said I might need to stop. And she was like, I was going to talk to you about that anyway. I think it's time. Yes. And it was a really amazing feeling, because it was like, oh, now I've moved on, and now I haven't had any therapy for the past 5 years. I've had therapy every week at least, so this is the first time when I haven't had any therapy for since middle of February. I don't really feel like I need it. I have moments, but generally I'm like, I really feel like everything's pretty good.
Awesome.
I think
go on.
I was going to say, I think what's made it me feel better is I've stopped thinking, oh, I want to be a rock star. Oh, I want the podcast to be bigger and all of those kind of things. I've just gone, just enjoy what is. And that's been the difference. That's been the clincher for me. Is the not looking outside. And I think we all do that. We're all kind of aiming and striving for things. But that can quite often be quite, destructive as well.
Detrimental. It's like the idea of, you know, once I achieve this thing, I'll be happy. And once I get here, I'll do this thing. And you realise, your life's carrying on and happening whether you are there or not. So, you know, you've got to try and at least enjoy the smaller things until you work through that. But, I mean, I'm one of those advocates, but it's probably because of, you know, my sister convincing me as I've seen it in my own life, but I'm an advocate for, I feel like everyone should or could benefit from therapy. You know, this whole concept of therapy in this country is quite new, and people talk about their emotions and feelings, but I just feel like there's basically not one person it wouldn't benefit.
Yeah, I agree.
A stigma that to go to therapy, you have to be sort of going through X, Y, or Z. Whereas often therapy can just be a space to just let things out, you know? So mates for 3 hours and just let it all out, you always feel better after. So
I mean that's
in the same way, like with, as you both know, as all three of you know, like I'm very much that person that I'll phone up and be like, all this shit's driving me fucking mad. And like, it is actually using friendships and discussion to help maintain some form of happiness, because we all deal with stress in different ways, right? And what you realise is, and something I've realised, I think, as a result of sort of being on Mouth of Madness podcast and listening to people talk openly about that stuff as well, is just that it's how you, I think it's how you learn to process and use that energy and it's something that word in itself is something I'm finding myself saying more and more and more and more lately, about like getting positive energy from any situation and listening a lot, because like all three of you deal with things in your own way very differently as friends of mine, as I know. And like Lee's, you've in the last what, like 3 to 4 years, I've noticed that you've found an awful lot of calm compared to the Lee thing I met over like 15
yeah.
years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'm a northern lad, so you don't talk about shit in the north, you know what I mean?
That, this is why I was thinking, like, first I love, you know, there's like a female perspective. So Chrissy was saying, like, she'd, you know, talk with friends or a sister, and women are much better at that than men, and that's why this podcast exists. And then I'm like, it's like Danny McNamara from Embrace is northern, and he was like,
You don't. But nearly every single one of my mates has got some sort of weird tick, you know, like, I won't say names, but...
You can't say names.
I know, yeah. You forget that you're not having a chat with mates, don't you? Well, we are, but you know what I mean. But, you know, and each one of them will take the piss out of you for mentioning anything like mental health or you know, feel a bit down. They'll just fucking... They just do. It's just in their nature. So... But I've had my fucking struggles, man, especially with being a little bit hot.
Quick
to react to certain... If I feel like someone's, like, trying to have me over or just... whatever, man, if they just... Previously, I think what Warren's alluded to is there's a few situations where someone's crossed me a little bit and, it doesn't end well normally, but... It's normally a verbal thing, though. I'm not like a violent man. It's just like I'll react very quickly, and it won't be pleasant stuff that comes out of my mouth. And I've been trying to work on that quite a bit, because it's not necessarily what I'm actually thinking. It's more of a visceral reaction against myself for being pissed off about something than it is anything else. And I'm just using this dickhead who bumped into me in a bar to vent. And I started to realise that, but. When I had the kids and lockdown happened and stuff, there was some moments there where it was like, lock yourself in a cupboard and try not to fucking tear your own head off, you know, because it was just like, the world's caving in, I'm trapped, I can't fucking breathe, I don't know what I'm doing. And but for me, I don't know whether I found it or it found me, or I fucking universally want to get about that particular question, but for whatever reason, I found this thing called TM.
Transcendental Meditation.
I went... Have you done it? I've done it,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I went and found TM. I did the course, like a 4-day course, and they teach you how to do it and all that kind of stuff. And it has just fucking resonated with me in a way that, like, I can't even begin to articulate the benefits of it. For some people... They do it, and they do it for a while, and nearly everyone I've spoken to say, it's got massive benefits to it. But the thing that I've found is, if you stop doing it, the benefits go away. It's kind of obvious. Yeah. And if you keep doing it twice a day, if you don't booze and you do TM, or at least do TM first before you have a little drink, this weird thing starts to happen where that you'll know that kind of like warm, fuzzy, calm feeling you get when you're in that transcendental state, that starts to carry through with you in your awake time when you're just walking around in the day. So whereby before, someone would say something and I'd be like, I've got this like little cushion that goes, it's just that anger that you're feeling isn't them, it's inside your head and you're making you can choose to do something with it. You can manifest it into anger, or you can just stop being a baby and drop it and realize that you're making it inside your own head. And when that started processing, I was like, I am in control of my own thoughts and my own actions.
Fuck,
I never thought of it that way. I'm not saying this is right or wrong, by the way.
No.
This is what resonated to me. It was like a lightning bolt when I realised that everything that's happening outside of this brain is actually only happening inside, because it. I can't see anything without my brain interpreting it as a vision. I can't hear anything the same way. Taste, feel, touch. So everything literally is my own internal interpretation of what's going on behind, outside of me, right? And when I started realising these things, I started going, oh, fucking hell, I'm putting my own spin on everything here. And not only am I doing that, it's manifesting itself in ways outside my life that are not beneficial to me whatsoever. And when these things started clicking in, I just calmed the fuck down. And now I get to choose whether I have a good day or not. I get to, you know, like when Warren's like having a fucking spin out, it's normally I'll try and explain to you that if emotion is energy, right? It's just a form of energy. Everything on the planet, everything in the universe is energy when you boil it down to the finest thing.
Yeah.
And energy attracts to a similar kind of energy. So if you have a negative thing going on, you will attract more negative things. If you have a positive thing going on, you will attract more positive things. And it's true, right? If you go into, I went into a shitty conference call situation today, and I just convinced myself that it was going to be good.
Yeah.
And it was, you know what I mean? Like, it was good. I went in there and I was just like, and I walked out of it going, yeah, fucking hell. I mean, it was grueling, but it was like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm happy with that. Mm. Whereas if I hadn't have done that, and I'd have just let the day take me away and get wrapped up in the, why is the world doing all this shit to me? Mm. I don't deserve this. It's not my fault world that I used to live in. You go into a situation like that and it just goes to fucking shit. And then you wonder why everything is going to shit around you. And then you start blaming yourself.
You're asking it to be shit.
Yeah.
You're going like, my brain wants everything to be shit. So everything around me will prove it's shit. And I don't, it's funny.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's just like,
I really, really love what you just said. Like, for starters, I'm really shocked that you just said it, because you always come up.
Told you, I'm northern, I don't talk about
that. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. For starters, I did the TM 4-day course as well. It's not cheap, is it?
Nah. Worth every fucking penny, though, if anyone's listening to this that's thinking about it. And I mean, I was skeptical going in there. I grilled the poor TMs. I was like, tell me why I've got to pay. Like, what's all this about? No, can't you give me
the army.
Yeah, you know, I was like, nah. But how wrong I was, or right I was, I don't know, whichever way around, I ended up doing it in the end. So, you know, I'm really glad I did.
But there's elements we can't talk about, of course. And I did it, maybe 3-4 years ago, and I've always struggled to stick with it. But what I still took a lot of good from it. Like, I've never really done it every day, but I've always, like, if I am having a hard time, I'm like, I've got this thing that they gave me that I can go to.
You can go and jump in. Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
And it's there and it's mine. And it's and because it's like, you know, you can't talk about it in the same way. It makes it more special. And it did open my eyes to meditation. If I'm not doing well, my wife goes, go and meditate.
Yeah.
And I'll use YouTube, but I will do the other, mix it with transcendental meditation.
What I can say is, honestly, it's got levels to it that I didn't realise. The best thing that the teacher said to me when I did mine was, she said, do 3 months twice a day and don't miss it. And then come back to me and tell me how you're feeling. And I wrote her, I probably find the thing that I wrote her, because I felt so different within myself that I felt compelled. And Warren, you know me, I don't do this kind of shit. But I felt compelled to just message her and say, Val, I've said her name now. Her name is, you can find it online. Valerie Murray, actually, if you want to.
Yeah, you can find
it. If you want to look into transcendental meditation, Jersey. She said, do it for 3 months every day and then let me know how you're getting on after that. And now I know the reason why she said that, because something happens where, like I sort of said before, that feeling that you get, I can feel it right now. It starts appearing in your life in these weird ways. And this is going to sound so not me, but like something will happen. Like my son will look at me in a certain way, or like the other day, you know, those photographs that I showed you where I took my son on the beach and it was like sunset.
Stunning.
Something happens now within me that never used to happen, where like it's almost like, I don't know. Like,
you notice it and you didn't notice
it. I'm just like in awe of everything and everyone that's around me, and I feel completely lifted by it. It's a totally, totally next level.
It makes you kind of start to recognise your place in the order of like the world a little bit, and it makes you realise that you're part of the earth in many ways.
Yeah. Part of everything.
You enjoy things more.
Yeah.
And you get this kind of control over your brain. This basic concept that you are actually in charge of your thoughts.
Yeah.
And most of the time your thoughts are going, oh, if you do that, you'll look stupid.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, what you don't think, what nobody realises is, because you don't, is that the brain has different layers to it. I'm talking about the mind, sorry, not the brain, but the mind has different layers to it. And where most people sit is at the top layer, which is kind of like, they compare it to like a body of water, like the ocean, where if you can imagine like the waves at the top, that's where surface level activity is. That's at like, gotta go to work, stuck in traffic, gotta get that thing done. And it's kind of really choppy. You're up and down all the time. Your emotions are up and down all the time because different things, you're reacting to things that are coming at you all the time. When you do TM, it basically pulls you down to like the depths of where your mind creates thoughts. So before the thoughts bubble up and turn into emotion, it's where they're actually created. So you're residing in a place that emotion can't affect you anymore. So it's just bliss. There is no negative emotion in there because your emotions haven't been affected by the thought that's time to pick. Do you see what I'm saying?
So it
basically it just keeps, every time you do the meditation, it pulls you away from those choppy waters and it takes you down to where the calm waters are at the bottom for 20 minutes, and then you go back up again. And the more you do it, the more calm you take, and the calmer the waves get, and everything just. Yeah. And when there is something big coming around the corner, you can do like what you just said. Then you just go, okay, I've got this bullshit thing coming up that I'm like a bit nervous about or whatever. I'll just sit down and do 20 minutes of that. And all of a sudden I'm like, fuck it, bring it on.
It don't really matter.
Yeah.
Like, that's the funny thing is, when you kind of connect to the universe, and this all sounds so pie in the sky, that you realise how little things are and how things don't really matter that much, really. And if you get into that kind of frame of mind when things don't really matter that much, really, like life's so much easier.
Yeah.
And your eyes are much more open to like the beautiful things around you. I mean, it is a Buddhist thing in many ways.
Well, it comes from Maharishi. Yeah. He studied in, you know, like, I don't even, Buddha, but like thousands and thousands and thousands of years of knowledge of doing this particular mantra-based meditation. But what he did was he basically turned it into science. So he worked with, he was actually a scientist as well as a yogi, and he turned it into a science. So he worked with science, and he was the one that predicted the unified field theory before it was proven by science. Because the same thing, he's saying everything is on the balance of a unified field, and then science proved it. About 20 years, 30 years later after he'd said it or something. I may have got those years wrong. But, like, he was around in the 60s, and then when did the unified field theory come out? You know, so he was always tying it to fact, and that's what really drew me in, because I'm a logic-based person. I have to know the logical reason why something is happening and then apply logic to getting out of it. I can't do this emotional wishy-washy shit. What's the fact? How do we deal with it? So when all this wishy-washy kind of like, you know what, you're laughing because you know what I'm like, right?
I know what you're like.
You know what, I'm fact-based. Give me the facts. Give me the facts. Fuck off with the emotion and give me the facts.
So
when it comes to something like this, I need to have some grounded logic in it. But now what I've come to realise is that doesn't even matter.
I don't think you can have that with logic, if I'm honest. I feel like they're two totally separate things, and I think
No, they're not. There's a lot of logic in it. There's a lot of logic
always,
in it when you
but
when
I mean if when you boil... you know, what you're talking about when you talk about, you know, looking at that photo of your son and feeling just like a different way than you ever did. What is when you sort of think about those sorts of experiences within yourself. I mean, maybe you see that as logical, but I don't see it so much as logical as...
What it is is, right, so you've constantly got this feeling of bliss running all the way through you all the time. But the reason why you can't feel it all the time is because you have this, like, radio static of noise going on inside your head, which blocks it out. And all the transcendental meditation does is it turns off that static noise. And just allows what is unnaturally there already to come through. It's just, it feels new to you because you didn't have it. Or you had it there before, but you weren't, it was, do all this shit that's going in your head that you think is important, this static noise gets turned off. And then you're like, so then when you see a picture of your son, I haven't got bills and fucking my next meeting and going through my head. I actually look at it and see it for what it is and then resonate with it and go, fucking hell. Like, and it fills me with all this glorious feeling. And it's fucking amazing. Like, it really is, honestly. Well, it's a life-saving, changing thing.
Go on, Chrissy.
Well, my
dad's been a Buddhist,
right? He's been a practicing Buddhist for about 30 years. I don't know how long. Ridiculous. He chants every day, but, like, he's just the calmest man I've met in my life. Yeah.
I really like about Buddhism, it works to a degree. Buddhism's about, it's not about looking to be happy all the time. It's about just being content and being able to sit in contentedness and, like, kind of almost being neutral.
Mm. Yeah.
And I find that quite interesting because, like the world and all the noise is about that pursuit of happiness. Like, what's in the American Constitution, the pursuit of happiness? And it's like... It puts it on this pedestal that's really actually quite hard to achieve. Mm. If you look to be just content, that's much more achievable.
Well, if you actually stop and don't do anything and don't have any of those thoughts and noises going through your head and feel what it feels like, it's a nice feeling.
Yeah.
So that is neutral. It's bliss. But happiness and bliss are two different things. Happiness is a byproduct of bliss.
Something I'm learning, actually, is 100%.
But also, sorry, go on, Warren. Look at us, we can't help ourselves, can we?
No, but I've been actively trying to eradicate negativity. I had some really dark days during the lockdown bit, but I realised as well it was about my reactions a lot to people or actions of others and stuff, as opposed to not just sitting down and going, I can do all this shit. It's fine. Like, and just sort of putting it into, like, structuring the chaos that is in my fucking brain. And it's something that with help of friends and like you lot, it is definitely, I see clarity in what you said, basically. I understand how that is beneficial.
We tend to take everything so personally. If someone says something to you, you take it personally, it dents your ego. And if you're able to kind of see your ego and see it for what it is, which is a massive liar, then you're able to kind of step back from it, and that's about learning to control your thoughts, because your thoughts generally are going, that was out of order, you look really small. And that's your brain trying to protect you from harm and being upset, but it actually makes you upset. And like, that's what Buddhists don't, they strip away the ego.
But even what you said about, like, the pursuit of happiness being something that's in the Constitution, the funny thing is, when you think about it, like, the ways you're taught to be happy are nothing to do with the ways that actually make you happy, in my opinion.
Honestly, that's the first
so
thing
messed up,
when I realized this, I said they should teach it in primary school. It should be the first thing you learn, because if you learn this, you could learn everything else a lot easier, because you wouldn't have all the emotional shit rattling around your head to stop you from concentrating on actually learning the lessons.
But it almost feels like it's sort of like a self-trickery in a way, because it obviously this is me being intense, but it's almost like if you teach everyone the key to being happy isn't necessarily becoming CEO of a company, or if that's what it is for you, it is. Yeah. But almost capitalism does well because we need people to work really hard,
yeah,
9 to 5, 40 hours a week, and think that's normal. Do you know?
Well, that's what they tell you.
Yeah, so it's not surprising people will find it hard and struggle with mental health, and it's at least finding, yeah, people are starting to talk about it more, but we've sort of born into this situation where what else was really going to happen, you know?
I think you've totally nailed it there, lovely, Chrissy. And I think that's the thing. We're kind of told from TV, from most things that are easily accessible. Even at school, you know, like my daughter, they're going, oh, you've got to do well in GCSEs, otherwise he won't be a productive human being. It's no, you haven't. It takes a long time. Like, it takes a certain amount of going through the tough bits to realise that that's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, you've got to have money. You've got to have more money so you can have a better car than next door. And it's like, no, that don't fucking matter. Like, that's all bullshit. You know, that is the world that we're sold through capitalism. And that's why, like, Russell Brand was getting laughed off. But that is basically what he was saying. And because he's a big component, like, him and David Lynch did a lot to kind of promote transcendental meditation. And it's still kind of laughed off. But I find it's laughed off because everyone else is going, hold on, but then, like, if you're meditating, you're not making money.
Exactly. That's exactly why it's laughed off.
Yeah.
Because if everyone grew up with that perspective, they wouldn't have the interests in order to chase that massive more. You know, like, I'm not against having money, but I'm against killing yourself to get it, you know, or causing yourself detrimental harm to get it, or
letting down,
or even thinking, yeah, because then you've got this false target. When you finally arrive at what you want to achieve, you're gonna get there, and it's gonna be empty. It's just gonna be this vacuous fucking place of nothing, and you're gonna have railroaded your entire life to get there. So your kids will hate you. You fucking, you know what I mean? Everyone will think you're an arsehole in work or whatever because you've just running everyone out of the way just to get to where you want to be because you want to jostle for position. And you see this all the time, like constantly, all the time. And are they happy?
No. It's funny, right? Because I think, like, with TM, with a lot of kind of more neutral spiritual stuff, even if you look at paganism, it's all about the self. It's about you and how you how actually you're amazing. And then and this is why I don't like a lot of organized religion, because they're like they take the onus off the self and you being everything you can be, and they go, oh no, don't worry about that, look, someone's going to look after you. And it's like,
no.
Something changed in history. It never used to be that way. And like, suddenly it's like, oh no, you're not allowed to do that. And we've all grabbed hold of that. And religion, like Christianity, for example, look at that's kind of written into the Constitution. It's written into our laws. And it's like, you know, everything's set against this idea that like we can actually be quite well, really. We can be well and happy and we don't need all this shit. People don't like it.
I think the times they are a changing, though, to quote old Bob.
Very, very slowly.
Yeah, but I'm just thankful that I found it, you know, purely selfishly from my standpoint. And for those around me as well, I think I get a lot more out of my kids now. I get a lot more out of my wife, you know, in terms of, like, not badly emotionally reacting to something that's maybe going on in her life. Like, if we both had a tough day at work and I, you know, and she tries to talk to me about it, maybe I'm not that sympathetic here. And then that has like a spark of, like, a negative spark that goes on for the year. You know, like all those little things that happen that could just be avoided by having that calm mind have kind of all, like, weeded themselves out. And I'm really thankful for that, because I don't know where I'd be without it.
It's a blessing if you get there at 16, 35, 99.
Whatever. I'm just happy I'm I'm still getting there. I'm not, you know, arrived.
Got to the point where you're even
I'm not a deity. a deity bitch, as Kat calls me.
Chrissy, no man, it's a beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Who did you say your dad was a Buddhist?
Yeah, he's been a practicing Buddhist for about 30 years. He was raised Christian, but he never really got on board with it. He's
good man.
Been a practicing Buddhist for about 30 years. He's always trying to get us to get involved with him. It's not really my thing though, just because I think with anything in life, you have to find your own practice and find what works for you.
Yeah.
I can still speak some Japanese from the book that he has to read and recite every day, but that's about it. I used to do it as a kid. But yeah, he's very calm. He's always, you know, as a kid, I used to find it quite frustrating because I'd be like, have an opinion on this, feel this. And he was always really level-headed and sort of like, you know, things will happen when they do. And I'd always think, be on my side and things like that, you know. But when you get older, you realize it's kind of the way to be. I mean, I get frustrated at myself. I really miss being like young and like, you know, erratic and getting annoyed by this or reacting to this. Because these days I just kind of chill. I'm just kind of like, well, it's not really that big deal. Like, it will figure itself out. And it's a happier way to live. But like, I do miss, you know, that like if I had a Latin temper or something quite fun like that, at least in my short term. But yeah, I mean, he has been for 20, 30 years and he swears by it. But I think often when you have someone in your family who's sort of doesn't push you to something, but they're like, I love this, you should love it, often you don't go in that direction.
No, because you want to find your own thing.
Yeah, very good merits.
And you need to rail against something when you're young, don't you? You need to.
Yeah. Like the patriarchy and all of that. Yeah. But, yeah, it's more, obviously more of a theology and a way of life than a religion. Like, he would never call it a religion, but I know some people do. But I think they've got a lot of the right stuff going on there as far as how to treat other people and how to try and live your life and to just appreciate the smaller things and not sweat the even smaller things. And, you know, even I can't even think sometimes. I go mental into my head about thinking, like you're saying, Lee, when you're looking at photos and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm part of this universe, part of this earth. Like, that way of thinking is so lovely because it means you don't really sweat the small stuff, but then you also can't go that far into thinking that way because it makes a
you also, it's more realizing that small stuff doesn't actually exist. Most of the time it doesn't even exist. It's more just like Nick was saying, it's more your ego telling you that this thing's happening. You need to not be happy about this because this thing's going to happen. It's bad. It's going to be bad. It's going to be real bad. And you're like, but actually the thing hasn't happened yet. Your mind's making it up, but it's predicting the future, and it's always going to predict it in a negative way. It's never going to predict it in a positive way because your ego is predicting the future for you, which is where fear comes from and trepidation and all of that kind of stuff. But none of it actually exists unless you're Mystic Meg and you can actually actively, you know, predict the future. None of it actually exists. It's all inside your head. When you start getting around to that, man, it's fucking revelation.
It really is.
I can breathe.
That's bizarre. I remember, you know, when I was younger, I used to always, because my sister's a lot more, she's like me, but I'm a lot funner, like a lot more eccentric.
So is she older than you, Chrissy?
Yeah,
that is impossible, Chrissy.
She's 3 years older than me.
Can't be done.
So I used to, that's what you think. I used to always think I was just really boring and like no one wanted to talk to me. And I was like, I'm just the loser version of her. Like, I'm so uncool. And like, everyone, when I talk to people, they're like, oh, leave me alone. And, you know, so like I went to all of that. It's crazy what your brain does to you. And it's sort of like growing up where you still have those thoughts and you think, oh my God, is this person thinking I'm annoying? Or are they thinking, you know, oh God. But then you sort of think, look, just go through your life, be nice, having fun. If people aren't your kind of people or they don't like you, then they won't be your friends. But you know, that never really happens because the second that you actually think about and care what people think of you, it often means that you aren't a bad person. Do you know what I mean?
Also, you're also making up how they think about you, which is also your ego. So it doesn't even exist.
Yeah. Well, my underlayers would say that I'm not making it up and they were really thinking it all along.
But all the while, just you on the back going.
But you just have a calm face. But, you know, you sort of grow up and you realise everyone has these thoughts. You think you're the only person in the room who's a loser or subconscious. But then you realise, hold on, pretty much everyone, unless they're a narcissist, and they're very rare, these thoughts. And then you stop panicking and you think, there's only one of you, so...
Yeah,
I think everyone's brain is a narcissist. Everyone's mind is an element of narcissist in it, and that's why we're so easily dented.
Yeah, because everyone thinks they're the center of their own movie, their own universe, but that you're not. You're just particles drifting along. Yeah. Like, you're not It's not the centre of your movie, you know.
Like. I have this regular therapist, Peter, I see, I did see him, and we're friends now, and he was just saying, like, you can, this always comes back to it, to me, is that you can only control what you do and what you think, and there's nothing else. And the rest of it is your brain's making up shit to make you feel bad about yourself. Your brain's trying to help you, but it's wrong 99% of the time, and you can step away from it. It's quite hard to do, but you can do it. It's totally achievable. And it actually isn't that hard once you get into a habit.
No.
I think for me, you just need a vehicle. You need something that... Because when you don't realise how indoctrinated you are into this life.
Yeah.
And how, like, you know, these adverts and the fact you've got to dress this way and you've got to, like, buy that clothes and because that's important there. If I spend this money on that, it's going to make me feel this and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's all just because you've been born in this environment. None of it is really real.
Mm.
None of it really exists. Like, all you actually need is air, water, and then food. And then close to keep, like, the, you know, like, but people don't think like that. They don't think like that literal, but it's
and
true.
Most of what we think has been fed to us by a very clever advertising agency who have said, oh, that makes them feel self-conscious. So we'll sell it.
Yeah. I mean, we'll look at social media for that. I mean,
well, social media is really bad for that.
Fucking...
I mean, I wonder who goes on social media and feels better about themselves because I don't think I'm better.
No,
you know my troubles with social media.
Oh, mate,
I've had to hire someone to deal with it because I can't just. I mean, I do check it because I just check that like shit's happening because I pay them money to deal with it and stuff. But I can't be that guy that's in there just like fucking on it all the time because it's one of the things that I've noticed about doing this TM stuff is that. I notice things that give me a negative feeling more than I used to. So like hangovers, they give me this negative feeling. I get this like fear and I don't like it. It's putting me off drinking. Like tonight, my missus, I went to the shop and she said, can you get me some wine? And normally I'd be like, yeah, get myself a bottle of drink. But I just like, nah, because I don't want that neggy feeling. Do you know what I mean? Like,
that's something you've definitely suffered with. And we have together as well.
Like I get it from social media, that's so I'm on it, and I'm like on it, and I come off it, and I'm like, how do I feel now? I can check in with myself better, and I'm like, I don't feel as good as I used to before I started doing that.
Yeah,
no, maybe I'm not going to do that again. You know, and that, I wouldn't have that kind of like awareness of how I'm feeling if it wasn't for sitting down for 20 minutes and checking in.
Yeah, just got angry
in that level.
It's funny. I think like I use social media as a tool more than anything. Like to advertise a podcast, etc. So I don't engage with it in the same way, but I do sometimes, and I invariably makes me feel less than, not as good as.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I want things.
Yeah. Yeah. Where's my 1 million followers? Like, you know, yeah. Why is that other music producer got 1 million followers and he's sort of like, fucking hell, man. What? I'm back in this world again. Like,
You're basically never be good enough. Yeah, what was it? I saw, this is obviously the most ridiculous comparison and it's really a silly thing to mention. I just saw a silly article about Khloe Kardashian. I don't know who's who, but she just had a picture taken by her grandma of her in a bikini and then like...
As you do.
And then she was like, I'm so embarrassed by this unflattering photo. But she looked perfect, right?
I'd rather see a grandma in a bikini.
Yeah, so would I. It'd be quite funny. But, you know, that whole social media image of, like, what you think everyone expects, what you should be. It's like, for someone to be that, their brain to be that, like, far gone from reality, that's all that can kind of do to you, you know?
It's a weird interpretation of the world, you know? Anything you search and then the things that you go on Instagram, for example, and the images I see are right because I searched about a car. Then like a specific car, you see now on my feed of like searches, there's a car with these guys that are like loads and loads of money and it's selling a life that it just doesn't exist. Like the guy's probably a chauffeur driving around.
Like, I mean,
Maybach car.
Have you not seen those? They've set up these like, they've set up these photo shoot places now where they've got like, fake planes in them and stuff. Have you seen this? No, and then the girls, they just go, oh, yeah, so you've got like a quarter of a plane, like in a huge like room, hangar room type thing, and it's all like set up with leather seats in it and stuff. It's not a real plane. And what they do is they go in there and they get a glass of champagne and they get the photographs taken and then they put it on their social media.
No, why me?
I'll tell you something. It'll be a bit grim. So I used to work with quite a lot of gang members. You know, like. Oh. London gang
members. That was a plot twist. Didn't expect you to say
that.
Drop,
leave the room.
You know,
quite
a lot. So interestingly enough, like some of them, like they'd be in the big videos that would be all over YouTube, like, you know, with like drill artists and things. And if you get them to a point when they're actually talking like human beings, they would say things like, you know, like the photos, they go, oh, look at this photo. And they'd have these big rolls of money and a Bentley, because that's what was in the video. The Bentley's hired. They've all chipped in their money together to hire a Bentley for the video, all of them. The, the money is like they've got like a few 50s rolled around a roll of fake money. And it is all just pretense. It's all facade. And then I, oh, we're all fucking hard. One of them has been to prison. The rest of them are just wearing masks and they're you know, they're doing the
screen. They ain't that hard.
Like, in fairness, I wouldn't fuck with any of them.
They don't listen to this. They'll be like...
Yeah, maybe I did. But I've met quite a lot of people and they're like, it's bullshit. It's all bullshit. It's all face. And it all comes from the idea of, like, American hip-hop. And like, American hip-hop comes from... They had nothing, so...
You had nothing. Yeah.
You come from nothing. You want to put it's like if you put it out into the world, you might get it, kind of thing.
Yeah, cool.
I think there's an element of truth in that, maybe, but you there don't is, think about it.
Like, positive affirmation think, and stuff, and you know, and what do people do? Yeah. Like, things on their walls, like the
I don't know if that's a wad of fake money wrapped with a 50.
Yeah, that's true. That's it.
But the weird thing is that like we're all participating in like this agreed delusion, and that's what I find really weird. Like I can't hear it or get into it, because I secretly think, do any of you care? Any of you bother? Do you all think what you're doing? Because I think, what am I doing? Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
It's weird. Like, I can't figure out who really is in it and believes it, or either we're all pretending to believe it, or I don't really know.
For me,
I'm fascinated.
A lot of this started to click when I bought that house. You know, the one that was a bit too big for what I really needed. And that doesn't mean to sound poncy. I just sold a house in London and moved up north, and you get more bang for your buck. But I bought it, and it was a nice house and stuff. And I always thought it would be like this thing that I've landed. I finally, you know, like all of this stuff that I've been going through is all going to go away because I finally landed in this place that I've always thought I should have been at. You know, I should have owned that house. I should have had this car. I got it all, and I was just like, oh, fuck, it's not here. What do I do now?
Lee, I had exactly the same moment. I was like, right, I bought a house that's as good as the house my parents had. You know, like, I had two kids and I'm doing all right. You know, I'm a manager. And then I was like, I got married. You know, I'd done all the things. And then I was like, I've never felt so ill in my life, you know, mentally.
Really?
I was unwell. And it was like, no, it's not here. It's not here. It took, then my wife got cancer and it was like, oh, none of this shit fucking matters, man. None of this shit fucking matters at all. And we even got life insurance, massive payout, and like, I couldn't care less. Not fucking
shit, you know.
And it was like, none of this shit, none of it fucking matters. You know, like the I want. It's all bullshit, man. Really, all you want is to be all right.
And the thing that's kind of like I'm trying to work on more now is kind of going off the back of what I just said there. Like when I do something and I leave it and I'm like, I analyze it a little bit. Like, how did I feel about that? I'm getting more of that on a daily basis based on what I'm doing all day. Like I finish a day's work and I'm feeling like, did I get how do I feel after that day's work? Could I have been doing something else that would make... And every time I do things like music or stuff like this, or I always feel kind of pumped up and happy and like excited and giddy after it. But, and you know, so, and then sometimes work can just be this grind, you know, and you just start thinking to yourself, all right, if I pump the energy that I've got for the things that I'm passionate about, and I just let go and just have the faith that I don't need the support blanket of what I'm doing for a living, will it work? You know, will it just find its way just based on pure enthusiasm and good energy about the fact that you're constantly doing something all day long? But I think people get stuck on that treadmill of you've got to do a job to sustain the things that you're passionate about. And
jobs could be happy.
Yeah, and that's been a dichotomy for me for years. And I think mainly because I've earned quite well. And, you know, I've always earned quite well. So it's always been kind of like a bit of a leap, like, fuck, do I stop doing the 9 to 5 and go and do something that I'm actually passionate about? But I do think that if I do that, it will work out probably better. Financially, happiness, whatever, it will work out as a better outcome.
That's pretty much what I did with this new job. Like, less money, but quality of life has just gone up.
Yeah.
It's funny, like I'm just amazed you've done so well as a rent boy, even at your age.
Honestly, killing it. I mean, I can't sit down for long, but
it's a beautiful thing.
Well, you've lost all that weight, innit? Paying loads of money.
You can pull your ass out, and it's like complete prolapse, but
we're at an hour and a half.
We're gonna
wrap up.
I feel like
ending it on a rent boy joke is probably the best way.
Brilliant. I could not have done that any better, Nick.
Someone squeezes the word in prolapse and then we finish. Like, all right.
Hey, you took it too far.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.